Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
My grief isn't always sitting with me. You know, I have toolbox strategies. I'm doing this today to raise awareness. So no one has... I have got down a lot, but I've got up a lot too. It's what everyone needs to do, is be able to get back up.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter, where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we'll listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story to share, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us on info@alexandrawalker.com, and that's Alexandra spelled with a KS, or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hi, everyone, and hi, Christine, and welcome to our studio and to the project, My Body, My Story. And while you're sitting in the makeup chair and Chitra is doing makeup for you, I'll be asking you a few questions. So tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm a mother of two sons. One is an adult. Mm-hmm. He's 27, and the other one's a teenager.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for 20 years almost, mm-hmm. and work in the area of mental health and drug and alcohol at the moment in Sydney. We moved to Sydney four months ago to make a fresh start.
From where?
Brisbane.
So you were born in Australia?
Born in Brisbane.
In Brisbane, yeah.
Noah was not my son who's with me. He was born in WA. Mm-hmm. I'm chipping away at a law degree. And it could take me another 10 years, but I don't mind because I'm interested in helping people who get discriminated against. We live near the beach now, which is something that I wanted to arrive at. I love swimming in the ocean pools. In Brisbane, in the Gold Coast, you don't have ocean pools. And for a couple of years, Sydney was attractive to me because I knew that all the ocean pools line the coast, mm-hmm. so I reached the destination with the ocean pools. I like to practice yoga. I've been practicing yoga since I was 27 and I'm 50. I go to the gym with my teenage son here in Sydney. I like to plan travel adventures, and I enjoy cooking, very novice, but learning along the way.
So what's your favourite cuisine?
Italian,
yeah.
It seems to be a tradition. I take my son to his Italian restaurant for his birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
Every year, so we've booked for next Sunday to go to the dinner.
Oh, it's his birthday next Sunday.
Yes, he's 16.
Oh, that's nice. We have same tradition with our family, but we go to Japanese restaurants usually for every birthday.
It's fun.
So you said you like ocean pools. What attracts you the most in that?
Well, growing up in Brisbane and having the Gold Coast as my backyard, we were always at the beach. Mm-hmm. And I suppose was always having to go through the waves. And at least with the ocean pools, you can just treat it like a swimming pool, but you've got the ocean water,
the
salt water. So I find that to be quite easy and refreshing.
And calm, yeah.
Calm, yes. I don't have to get smacked around by the waves on a choppy day, so...
So interesting. You said you work in the emergency department, or
I have worked in the emergency department as a clinical nurse in Brisbane. Now I'm working in a rehab in Sydney.
Yeah.
And so it's mental health issues and drug and alcohol problems combined.
Yeah. Interesting. I think it's a hard work to do, but probably. Hopefully rewarding.
Rewarding in a sense, having the experience, behind me is helpful, obviously, with all careers when you grow into it. But I like diversity in my career. Mm-hmm. I'd like to stay in Sydney for a couple of years, but I see myself going back to Western Australia.
Oh, you love it there.
I do love it up there. Over there, we were going to Broome for a holiday throughout COVID, and that got interrupted. So we'll have a holiday over in Margaret River at the end of the year. But I'd like to settle for a few years now in Sydney.
In Sydney. Mm. Okay. So what are you most passionate about?
Lifelong learning. So I started the law degree when I was 44. I had a lot of interruptions along the way, which was difficult, but I decided to just, you know, keep going with it if I felt passionate about it. Mm-hmm. So I am enrolled in one of the unis in New South Wales, and I plan to start back again in October.
Oh, that's interesting. So what made you do this change, you know, from medicine to law?
Sometimes it ties in. Nursing and law, there's a lot of grey areas. I suppose I think it's more of the side of, I think it's the discrimination. I think it's when, I think I've got a passion for nurses who, they don't stand up for themselves very often. They're notorious to remain quiet because they're scared to lose their jobs. And I've been through some tricky situations where I've had to get lawyers myself. I was innocent, and I know how it feels to be treated like, treated in a very malicious way by another nurse. And I had to overcome that. I got post-traumatic stress at a moderate level, and I had to take a couple of years off. And I used all the knowledge that I had as a clinician, which I believe helped me to reach that recovery stage, and tried another type of interesting therapy using medicinal cannabis. And that was actually what moved me into the healing stage. Mm. And I'm a very strong advocate actually for legalising cannabis, because I believe that there's too many people who need to have plant medicine and they can't access it. Mm-hmm. So I suppose that ties in with the nursing. I see so many people, so many clients that are hooked on opiates and there's a long history of cannabis. Like, it was legal 100 years ago and they took it away. So the law was like a weapon towards cannabis. So, and because I've survived post-traumatic stress and I'm well, and I know what it's like to heal, because it is an injury, it's a psych injury, I just have all this knowledge, and I know that a lot of people, there's a lot of stigma around it. So I just very bravely raise awareness on social media and sit back and observe how alcohol is a poison and used so often, but cannabis has been so left behind. So, you know, it's just known as a recreational drug. There's so much more to it than that.
So why do you think it was written off the natural medicine?
Because of the pharmaceutical companies. Mm. And I also, you know, strongly believe that we need pharmaceuticals. Mm. But I didn't learn about cannabis, the plant, at school. And just like the First Nations. Mm-hmm. First Nation people. So I think that's a shame that we didn't, but yeah.
Do you think it's because I heard of that movement legalizing that, and I know that my friends living in Canada, it's legalizing, and in some states in the US. So what is the main, my question, what is the main plus of that, and don't you get addicted to this, or like what's the downside of using this medicine, the natural medicine? The pluses and minus, the cons and pros of that.
Yes. Well, I know that being a cannabis user, I swallow a capsule, and it can... I guess the only side effect that I would get is that it might make me feel not necessarily tired, but I might just feel like that's it, I've had enough now for the week, and it's okay to just stop for a few days and use it when it's needed. There's no real side effects per se with the cannabis medicine. When you swallow it and it goes through your digestive system, it's actually a different effect than when you're smoking it. And growing up, we never had like the hydroponic cannabis. Once I started nursing when I was 30, all of a sudden, all these people started to come into hospital psychotic, but it was from the hydroponic cannabis. And it was very easy to identify why. And that was because they put all the chemicals to destroy the plant and to destroy people. I don't know who started it, but it got people on more pharmaceuticals. They had to take antipsychotic medication to get back to reality. So being a medicinal cannabis user, I can't really identify. Perhaps, like I said before, if I was to use it every day, say after work, perhaps I might feel less motivated to do something because it relaxes you so much. Your whole nervous system just stops. So it's the opposite to stress. You know, it relieves all those symptoms of stress. So you're not, you know, when you're under the influence, you don't have the cortisone levels high.
Yeah.
You know, it goes out to all receptors. The endocannabinoid system is the where all the receptors are in our body. So we didn't even learn about that in uni. So.
And the cortisol is the number one reason for all the disease and the weight gain and, you know, the all sorts of things which we don't like, you know, trying to fight it. And so it helps to lower the level of cortisol.
Absolutely. In fact, if you go home after a bad day and you have a capsule, and I have it organically, I don't buy the oil because you don't know what they put in it. If any cortisol was rising in my blood, it would be completely depleted within a half an hour. So I'm avoiding the risk of heart disease. You know, just or stroke, heart attack. And you know, I like I said, it took away the nightmares when I was experiencing the nightmares from post-traumatic stress, and it put my sleep straight back to normal. So it actually corrected my nervous system, if you want to say.
Wow, it seems like a magic medicine.
Well, because I understood about the nervous system and everything from being a nurse, I was actually really fascinated with the how it all unfolded.
So does it, I didn't understand, is there addiction to that or?
No
addiction. And I'll give you an example. I haven't had any for 2 weeks because I needed to order some more, and I haven't had any withdrawals. I said to myself that I'll just have a little break, perhaps because I felt that my motivation levels were down a little bit. I mean, I was still going to work. Mm-hmm. When I say motivation levels, probably just had to think twice about doing a few things that I would normally just jump into. Mm-hmm. So that's all. And yeah, definitely no withdrawals.
You just can get addicted to be too relaxed. That's the only addiction.
It should never have been taken away. It should never have. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's interesting. And is it legal here in Australia or?
It is in Canberra. You can grow a plant. Mm-hmm. The state of New South Wales are working towards that, mm-hmm. and they have been for 30 years. There's now a barrister in Queensland who's going to be running at the next election. Mm-hmm. So that's good because he understands all the law, mm-hmm. and the history. And the traffic laws need to change. So, for example, you know, if we have a big night on the alcohol, which I don't have now because of, you know, I just don't, because alcohol doesn't really go with my system. Mm-hmm. I could go and drive the next day and probably the limit would be normal, down to 0.0. Mm-hmm. But what's happening at the moment and in New South Wales is that because the cannabis stays in your system longer, if they pull you over and do a test and it's in your system, you automatically have to go to court. Mm-hmm. So there's an inequality with alcohol, a drug that makes people go to the emergency department, that causes domestic violence. Yeah. And then there's this other plant that is healing people, but you have to face a magistrate. So
what are the other applications? First, if you have post-traumatic stress, so it's kind of to do with your nervous system. I heard that they use it for cancer patients as well, to release pain, or am I wrong? So what uses for this medicine?
Yeah, so cancer patients use it to block pain. Mm-hmm. And there is about millions of Australians that are actually buying at black market because of this, because of the cancer suffering. So I think that's unfair that people who are potentially dying or going through chemo have to try and buy it cheaper just to get some relief from having cancer. Mm. It's used for Parkinson's disease, so it can slow down the symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's used for ADHD. Mm-hmm. It's used for anxiety.
So quite a few.
Mm.
You also mentioned about that it's hard sometimes to be a nurse and you meet sometimes some unfair treatment. So what is that? Do you want to talk about that as well? So what?
I think that New South Wales nurses are doing it pretty tough compared to Queensland and Victoria. Mm-hmm. You know, they've just had two strikes in Sydney and around New South Wales because they just want to have better ratios and better pay. And I don't think the pay is too much to ask for when they've just gone through COVID with burnout. So there'd be a lot of nurses with post-traumatic stress at the moment. And I think the ratios is fair for people who are sick. You know, they're not getting... It's being clearly obvious for most of my career that patients die and they're not getting the trained nurses that they deserve. So it's very much a human rights sort of issue too.
Okay, so let's move to our age questions. And my first question is, everyone knows that we have changes coming with age. But what positive changes have you noticed so far?
Well, I think the wisdom goes without saying, doesn't it? You become wiser.
For some.
I certainly have. I feel like I will take every opportunity that comes to me. I certainly have always been someone who takes risks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, life would be boring if we just didn't like changes, you know. Mm. So I definitely don't have a problem with changes.
What is the biggest challenge for you at the moment?
So I haven't seen my older boy, who's 27, for 7 years. Mm. And so there's an estrangement there that I never thought I would have. We had a very close relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, because grief comes in cycles, it's more around the holidays when it hits me. But it's funny because I found the ring that he bought for me when he was 14 out of his wages from working at Hungry Jack's. Mm. And I haven't looked at it for ages. And it was just so nice to remember that, you know, I did have that really amazing relationship with him. So it's an epidemic at the moment when adult children divorce their parents, so to speak. And there's many elements to it, and there were quite a few adults that were responsible for coercive control. He's a very soft man, young guy, sorry, he's a very soft person, and I raised him, but unfortunately there was adults that should have taken more responsibility, and they turned him against me. And my family. He hasn't seen his brother since he was 9. So his brother's gone through a lot of heartache. My whole family have gone through heartache.
But what was the reason for his departure? What triggered that?
This is what escalated. He was marrying his high school sweetheart. And I received an invitation for the wedding, and it didn't have that I could bring anyone along with me. And I just asked if I could bring someone. And unfortunately, when I asked that question, it was taken the wrong way. And it was just downhill from there. It was like, you have no rights to ask, you're not married. You don't have any rights to ask for anyone to be at the wedding. It went down pretty bad. My son changed his surname without telling us, and you know, it was legal for him to do that, but it was a moral thing. And I went around to try to talk to him before the wedding, and his mother-in-law told me that I wasn't a good mother because I wasn't married. And I said, well, I find that interesting because everyone wants to be around my son, but it doesn't make sense to say that to someone who raised him. So I told my son what happened, and he was already brainwashed. He said to me, no, she's right. She wouldn't have said that. She's more of a mother than you were. But was only like, yeah, when he was 14 before he actually met his now wife that he was buying, you know, he bought me a ring for Mother's Day. So, that was difficult. That's being difficult. You go through a lot of, you know, you contact lawyers. Every lawyer that I have contacted has said it's too complex, and they're right. So.
But what you were trying to solve through lawyers?
Because I've got 2 grandchildren. Mm. Now that I haven't met. One is 2, a boy, mm-hmm. and we only just found out that there's a little girl, mm-hmm. who's probably just under 1. And I was going to go for grandparents' rights, but...
To see them.
To seek, yeah. And I did contact a lawyer a few weeks ago, and he said, oh, it's really complex. And I said, yeah, you know, you're right, it is. And I ended up backing down because my mother ran into my son's other grandmother in the shop, and she got to say what she wanted to say in a civil way, and she was promised that she'd pass on the message, but unfortunately my son's grandmother, the other grandmother, has always been under that pressure of mental trauma. You know, you can't speak up, you can't do anything. Mm-hmm. So the conversation was civil, superficial, and
not effective.
But I felt that I felt that was enough for now. I got through that part of the grief for the start of Easter, and feeling okay again until the next holiday.
Yeah.
Luckily, grief isn't always, my grief isn't always sitting with me. You know, I have toolbox strategies. Mm. I'm doing this today to raise awareness. So no one has, I have got down a lot, but I've got up a lot too, which is, I think, tremendous. You know, that's what everyone needs to do, is be able to get back up.
But it's a very tough question you raise up. Yeah, I'm sure that there are people with similar problems, issues in their families, one or another way. Yeah.
I think it's important that he does sort it out eventually, because if his children ever find out, it might come back around to haunt them as parents.
They may ask him why he made such a decision, and he will probably have an answer, and
probably,
but then it will be up to the grandchildren later in life to decide if they want to find you, contact you, whatever. But I think in that situation the greatest lesson for parents is to learn it's a very tough version of this separation, you know, all the psychologists are talking about.
Mm.
And for the parent, I think it's the lesson to learn it hard way, to live their own life. Like,
well, he is living a good life, so I prepared him for the good life, and he got a lot of financial benefits from his grandparents. Mm. So they're living the, you know, they have the beautiful big house and the cars, and I never see that as a poor me. I just think, well, you're very lucky, but, you know, how you received it, anyway, as long as they stay healthy and
happy.
Happy. That's everything to me.
Yeah, you're like any mother would wish happiness and healthiness to their children, whatever and wherever they are.
Yeah, you have to. I think it just makes you realise that, you know, that you never did anything so significantly wrong. You have to sort of change the perspective to get on with life. Mm. And that's something that I've had to do quite a lot, is change the narrative.
Yeah. And accept their choice.
Yes. I'm still raising another son, and, you know, he's a joy to be with, so I'm lucky.
Breathe. It's good that you brought it out here, because sometimes it's very important to sound it out, to say it out loud, and to send a message, you know, whoever will be listening to you, at least they can hear you through the podcast.
Yeah, there was many times over the years where I would get angry about people judging me if I ever told them that I don't see my son. Mm. And I'd be scared that they, you know, that the whole, that saying, there's two sides of the story. Mm. But I've moved past that now, because I know deep down that there are two sides of the story, but it goes deeper than that. You know, there's a domestic violence, discrimination. It's all entangled. It's not just estrangement. It's, you know, I had to deal with a lot of domestic violence with his father in the younger years. And I got out of that relationship. And he said to me when I was 24 or 23, he said, if you ever leave me, you'll pay, you'll get paid for it. You'll suffer. So he definitely made sure that happened. But at least I know it's good to know where it came from, and it doesn't help, but at least I can say, well, actually there are two sides of the story, and my side is that I escaped domestic violence and he threatened to destroy my life with my son. So we're living in that moment now, and yeah.
Well, let's hope that you will find a way to live with this problem, I don't know, with this situation, and not to suffer from that. So, like, to make peace with this situation somehow.
Definitely having a fresh start. A lot of people have to make fresh starts when they've gone through a lot of grief. And so I'm living that now, the fresh start. And what a city to be living, living in. You know, it's a great city. Still got so much more to explore.
I think it's a good way to try and manage this kind of stress, as to adopt some changes, moving cities, moving countries, whoever can do whatever they can do. And just, it's good that you started your law degree study, and like, seems like you having pretty full life, and maybe there is this situation pushed you for something that you wouldn't do otherwise.
Yes.
There is a very philosophical saying, there is no friends or enemies in life. There is only teachers and students.
Yes. Yeah, that ties in with the lifelong learning.
Mm. So what is your greatest accomplishment so far?
Birthing two boys.
Mm. Being a mum.
Being a mum, juggling. I consider myself to be a good juggler. Mm-hmm. I've done a couple of degrees and with both the boys, and worked. Like I said earlier, I will get around to finishing this law degree, but mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter if I'm approaching 60, because I'll still be working.
Are you planning to work or just for your use, you know, you getting this degree, or you're planning to change the career?
I'm not 100% sure. I think I will, you know, once you get the degree and do a little bit of practice for a few months, you can just go out and be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I won't be doing anything like sitting the bar or anything like that because mm-hmm. of my age, but I will certainly be, I will be contributing a little bit to discrimination, human rights. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a nice way to grow old.
Yeah.
And with the nursing experience, the mental health, I think that will be useful.
Yeah, I agree. Very interesting. So now when you're 50, and if you could go back 20 years back and meet your 30-year-old self, What advice would you give her?
Keep being curious. I finished my nursing degree when I was 30, so and I was grateful that I did it. So no regrets. Keep being curious. Mm-hmm. It brings more excitement into life.
So, what advice would you give younger women who will eventually undergo this age changes and reach their 50s?
Well, I would say practice yoga because it keeps the muscle strains away. Mm-hmm. For example, I haven't practiced for about 6 days because I've been working night duty, but my body instantly told me today, my back told me it's time to get on your mat and it's time to stretch. Yeah. So when I do that, it will automatically soften up all my muscles in my lower back. Mm-hmm. So I don't consider myself definitely don't have chronic pain, but I definitely, and I don't really have acute pain, but I could see myself having that mm-hmm. if I stopped. So I think you can avoid chronic pain when you're 50 if you practice yoga or Tai Chi or something that where you're moving your body, but relaxation as well, mm-hmm. meditation associated with it.
Helps you to stay younger for longer.
Yeah, I feel amazing when I've done some yoga. I just, what do I often say? Like, I feel like I've lubricated my body.
Oh yeah, it's a good comparison, yeah. I like that, yeah. So talking about body, so you know that we have all that influences from outside about the body image, and where do you think mainly this idea comes from, and what is it for you, your perfect body?
Well, I think it's advertising. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in my teenage years, I didn't really buy the Dolly magazines all the time. I might have a look through mm-hmm. friends' magazines. But growing, older, I can see that, especially with many young girls and some adolescents, males, that, I've cared for many people with eating disorders. And, there's a few that I've seen, bulimia. And I think that I haven't had a problem with my image. I've always been, fortunately, been happy and proud of how I look, but I also know I've had to work at it. Mm-hmm. So if I feel that when I was younger, if I was, not exercising, I would just consciously get back into it. I think what made me always realise that if I couldn't get into that size that I was in, it was time to start
exercise.
Moving.
Yeah.
Mm. So that was the way I've always sort of not got myself into that negative thinking outlook on my body image.
What does it mean for you, feeling good and looking good? What comes first?
Yeah, I thought about this one. It's funny because I know that I love style, mm-hmm. and I love styling myself to my body shape. Mm-hmm. And, if I'm just having an average day, I know that if I put on something that's new and I love it, I know that I'll feel good after looking good. But that's not always the case. If I do some yoga, it won't matter what I put on. But I'm always aiming to feel good through fashion, style.
It's interesting that just before 1 week ago, I was sure that for me, feeling good is the priority to look good. But then I finally cut my hair and I changed my hairstyle and I look at myself in the mirror. And it definitely adds up, like I start feeling better because I look better. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. I thought it was in my young age this way, but actually I think it's like both, you know, it's
I think connected. It can be a combination.
A combination, yeah. Sometimes it does help looking good to feel good.
Yes, but I definitely know that when I'm practicing yoga before I go out, that I don't feel like I need to look good before. Mm. I just, those endorphins from the stretching,
yeah.
Those natural endorphins kick in.
So what makes you feel the most beautiful?
Having good health and being able to, fashion plays a big part in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So if I feel good, I'm going to look good. So there goes, that answers the question for what you just said.
Yeah, yeah.
In another way. But yeah, definitely good health.
I agree with you. And my last question, and if you have any favorite quote or thought, or what do you think about being a woman?
I believe in style, not fashion. Ralph Lauren.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, as I'm growing older, I'm embracing. I feel like I'm just embracing style more and more.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and thank you for joining our project. I hope you will enjoy the rest of the day and your photo shoot. And thank you for raising awareness with what you told us. Again, welcome and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
If you have an interesting story to share, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us on info@alexandrawalcott.com, and that's Alexandra spelled with a KS, or visit our website, alexandrawalcott.com.